Welcome to the Property Business Accelerator Podcast with your host, Mike Frisby. Mike is a well-respected property investor and has built up a high-yielding residential property portfolio across the Southeast since 2006. Mike is well known for his HMO expertise and for specializing in delivering high-end, premium and affordable HMO living spaces. Complex property knowledge, made simple, direct from the property front line with Mike Frisby.
Today's episode of the Property Business Accelerator podcast, and I'm delighted today to have someone who I have known almost since the start of my journey in property, because we started at similar times, maybe a year or so apart. So that's over 12 years that we've actually known each other, come across each other, and at times worked a bit together, cooperating together. So today it's Raj Berry. Raj has a large portfolio in the Midlands, mainly around Nottingham, but is also part of the YPM team, working his way up to co-editor as well. So you might know him from that. He's not a guy who blasts around on social media, so you might not know it. But what Raj does is he knows a lot about property, interviews a lot of people about property, so has some amazing knowledge about property. So very excited about this interview. So I'm going to hand it over to Raj to just sort of introduce himself and tell us a little bit about himself and what he's up to now. So Raj.
Thanks, and thanks for the invite, Mike. It's great to be on this interview, on this podcast. Yeah, we have known each other for such a long time, and people's property journeys begin in different ways, and it's a common question I get asked. You know, why did you start property? Did you want to sack the job, sack the boss, and all the rest of it? And actually, it was none of those. I really enjoyed what I did. So that comes as a bit of a surprise to people that, oh, you didn't want to do property. Well, I did. But for me, I think it was always a second income stream. Okay. And I wasn't really looking to get out of the world of work. So my background is very academic. I've got a degree. I've got a PhD in genetics. And that was going to be my route. Okay. And that's kind of what I wanted to do. I'm not from the UK. Came from India. When I was eight, I'm not going to talk about all my childhood, but I think there are some characteristics that I didn't know had labels on them, and we can touch on those later, which I think I've always had, but later on I learned there were certain labels attached to those characteristics. You know, as personal development market grew, I thought, oh, there's a name for this, is there? And one of them is hard work, perseverance. So I came to the UK at age eight, no English, didn't know any English, and then just, you know, as Asian parents often do, we get very much pushed down the academic route, which is kind of, and then you've got to be a doctor or an engineer or something. I did none of those, obviously, but science.
Well, you've got a PhD. That's not bad, is it? I mean, it's way above most other people. So may not be a doctor in terms of medical terms, but it's certainly a lot of in-depth knowledge.
Yeah. And I suppose I've just relied on the same thing again and again, which is why I raise it, is that I follow the same model after a bit of a hiccup, which we'll come on to in property. And it's just, you know, getting myself well informed and then just putting the hard graft in, to be quite honest with you. I'm not a big believer, never have been. This is where some of those characteristics I was talking about. You know, I think there's a book now which I've come across, which is called Talent is Overrated. I'm reading it. And yeah, I just think if you keep at it, whatever you're doing, and kind of steer a right path, I think you get into it. So I suppose we'll come on to the worst projects. I thought, incredibly, that you didn't need any educating in property, and all you really needed was a bit of deposit, find someone to kind of outsource it to. And Bob's your uncle, money will flow. So phase one, as I call it, was pretty much what I did. I got some equity from my own home and decided to outsource to some, you know, companies that are no longer around up in the Northeast. Just before the crash, you know what's coming. No discounts, no knowledge, no clue, really. And it all went horribly wrong. And the market crashed, particularly in the Northeast. And I've still got them, funnily enough. And we can touch on those. So I paused at that point, if you want to talk about my sort of property journey. And of course, I was working post-PhD. I went into corporate. I decided that the lecturer's life wasn't really for me, because actually what I really wanted to do was teach, but I also wanted to do research. And I could see at the time universities were really struggling for grants and all that sort of stuff. So I thought corporate was the way, and found my way into what eventually people, I mean, 2 years ago, nobody would have heard of this company because nobody had, but now they're on the news every day. And it's AstraZeneca, actually. So I know everybody knows AstraZeneca now because of the vaccine, but I never worked on vaccines, but it was medical research, basically. And yeah, I spent 22 years at AstraZeneca. I really enjoyed what I did. Along the way, I was getting a bit disillusioned. I think if memory serves me right, wasn't getting promoted when I should have been promoted. Money was never a big driver for me.
That sounds familiar. It sounds familiar. There's a lot of corporate stories, aren't there? The sort of, you know, oh, I didn't get promoted when I was hoping to get promoted, or, you know, or it wasn't just your hard work. And you come back to hard work, didn't you? You say, you know, work hard and it will get you places. And sometimes in the corporate world, that's not always the case, I think. And it's those that present themselves in a better light rather than doing the best job often get promoted in the corporate world. And I think that's probably a game where we have some commonality in terms of, you know, that's very frustrating. And but I think the first thing I wanted to pick out of what you said so far is the nugget of like, well, it's not necessarily talent, it's just hard work, but get the knowledge, which it sounds as though from the first deal you didn't necessarily have the knowledge, but get the knowledge and then just put in the graft and it will come. I think also people are scared of paying for knowledge sometimes. There's so much free knowledge now and people are like, oh, I don't know whether I can invest in this and invest in that. And there is a lot of free knowledge and you can pick up an awful lot, and a lot of people will start like that. And I think that is also a good place to start. But sometimes it's devil's in the detail, isn't it? I think. And that's where things go, because a little bit of knowledge might be a little bit dangerous sometimes. And maybe that's where you got to with the first deal. You knew property was good, and maybe not have enough knowledge. So do you want to talk through that deal that you did up north?
Yeah, but it wasn't one, it was four.
Four?
Yeah, and they all happened very quickly because I just thought, well, let's park four pots of deposit, yeah, which I got by refinancing where I currently live, and, you know, farm it out to somebody else. So that's why the four came quickly. I made four mistakes very, very quickly. Okay, we're talking about over a period of 6 to 8 months. And this is pre-mastermind, pre-doing... training with Simon Zucci. So yeah, it was very close to it, but it was before that. And of course, what I didn't know what was coming, and because I hadn't built in the equity by, you know, getting a discount, adding value, all things I know now, the market obviously crashed in 2008. The Northeast, which is where they all are, was really, really badly hit, and prices fell off a cliff, to be quite honest with you. And I could see all this unraveling in front of me. So, but you're right, second time round, which I call phase two, was doing it properly with knowledge. And that's kind of strange though it sounds, even though I'm quite experienced, I still walk that you know, road now. You know, I've had coaching off you to do with social housing, which we'll come on to. I don't really care, you know, because I've learned through personal development, you know, that kind of stuff. You know all these quotes, you know, we're going to have a few probably today. You know, if you think education is expensive, try ignorance. So I was on that ignorance. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, and a different person might have pretty much wallowed in it and given up. But I needed to go again because I knew I'd made some mistakes up in the Northeast. And I remember thinking probably at the back end of, you know, probably back end of mid 2007, because this all happened in about 2006. There's got to be a better way. And like most people do, started browsing the, you know, Google, etc. So,
you know what? I'm wondering whether we invested with the same company, because around 2006, I also did the same thing. I didn't buy four, but I did buy one. And that was my first property too. Yeah. That was actually, yeah, again, I overinflated price. I was led to believe there was a discount in it, but in reality, there wasn't a discount in it. It was overinflated. So there was like, it was overinflated. And I thought, well, this will cash flow. And to be honest, it kind of cash flowed. But it lost a huge amount of value because it was overinflated, because they'd sort of what later came out is that the guy who owned the company, I think, actually ended up in prison for fraud, and valuers, I think, ended up in prison for fraud. So I think there was a crossfire of it all. I don't think there was any much compensation to take. You just sort of lick your wounds and move on. But it was, I got out of it fine in the end, but yeah, that again. So first experience of, I think I did the same. It was like not enough knowledge, kind of knew a bit, wanted to invest, invested. eventually realized it probably wasn't the best investment. And probably, so very, as I said, very similar journeys along the way, and then went into, you know, do some more formal education. And I've done quite a bit of that in the early days. And I think we met being on, it wasn't my first education program, but it was my second, which was the very first mastermind by Simon Zucci.
Yeah.
We were all on that. I remember kind of being on that together, and Simon was, I was already doing quite a lot of stuff. And Simon saying, well, you need to come and speak on stage because you're doing quite a bit. And then I spoke on the next one, wasn't I, which you were on, which is where you first came across me, as we were just talking beforehand, which I didn't quite realize that was where you first came across me. But I remember talking to you quite a lot after that. And as you said, our paths crossed. So where did it take you next? You went on Mastermind, you started to work out what to do, and then you built the portfolio a little bit more.
I think so. I think that's exactly, you know, I started, as you do, you know, Googling, I don't know, property education, or I can't remember now, it was such a long time ago. And I would have come across whoever was operating at that time, and came across Simon, and
And so, were you buying direct to vendor initially? Because that's what one of the things that I did quite a lot of when
well,
I was going.
And obviously,
that was the talk that I think you saw, was the direct to vendor, kind of leafleting direct to vendor, go and sit in front rooms of people and talk to them.
Yes.
Sell fast. Did you do a bit of that?
Yeah, all the ones in the Northeast were just, you know, packaged kind of deals.
Yeah, not, I mean, not, outside, after the package, you
that's
got
right.
better and you
so,
focus more in the Midland, you know, the Nottingham sort of area.
Well,
it?
A couple of things happened. First of all, I realized that actually I wanted to keep it local because all these, obviously, hundreds of miles.
That was, again, that was a magic moment for me as well. When stuff was going wrong with that one property, it was like, I need to do this near me so I can go and visit and
switch
out. Because that 200-mile drive or whatever, just makes it hard.
Yeah, but until doing sort of, you know, what I call phase two, I've given quite a lot of talks, and I talk about it as phase one and phase two. In phase two, which was starting again, if you like, getting a bit of education under my belt, that was actually the first time I came across any concept where you could reach out directly to vendors. Okay, I'd never come across it before. Well, why would I? Because all I did was hand a company over a bunch of money and said, you know.
Yeah. That was a key part of the education, I think, in those days, you know, how to source properties. I mean, it is today, I think, you know, how to source properties. I just think there's lots of different methods and lots of different ways. You know, in different locations, there's different tactics, I think, as well. And depends what you want as well. You know, again, if you're focusing on something like HMOs, probably direct to vendor is not going to work because most of the houses can't be turned into an HMO.
Yeah, things have undoubtedly changed, but at the time, and I don't know what your recollection is, but my recollection is pretty strong in terms of what Simon was teaching then. You know, we had quite a lot of, you know, same day remortgaging, which I actually got pulled as soon as I started. But the concept there that Simon was teaching, there's very little discussion about HMOs particularly. It was really that go and buy a lot of these buy-to-let units, recycle your funds and grow a largish portfolio where each one of them will cash flow, you've recycled your funds, et cetera. So having remortgaged here once and kind of done a bad thing with that money, it was a tough conversation with the business partner wife to say, I'm going to remortgage again, okay? Because, you know, I'd already done it.
That's a very brave decision, isn't it? You know, this is your family house, brave decision. And as you said, at the time, they weren't talking lots about cash flow when we first started. Today, there's a lot talk about cash flow and living off the income and HMOs and all of that kind of stuff, focusing on cash flow. And I think you and I came to cash flow, you know, focusing on the profit out of properties a bit later. It wasn't until we built a portfolio that we then started really what I at the time called sweating the assets, really turned up the rental revenue.
Yeah. We'll come on to that.
We did on social housing, but let's come back to that conversation. So what happened in that conversation?
I persuaded her, you know, that I was going to sort of do it better properly this time. And obviously I did the training there and borrowed another slug of money and then decided that actually the only way, you know, because even JVs weren't talked about. I know they're common knowledge now, but, you know, we're talking about 2008, 2009. I thought the way I had to go about it was actually follow the process that he, you know, Simon teaches and others teach as well, and really need to find properties that at a deep discount add value and to be able to recycle that initial capital, okay, again and again. And actually, for the year that I was on the program, a great result for me was to, you know, be able to demonstrate that actually in my backyard, I could do that. Okay. And so I, you know, I wasn't a top performer or anything like that. I literally just did two buy-to-lets in that training year. But in both cases, the money I put in within 6 months of doing that first deal. And, you know, these days people get disillusioned. You know, I coach for Simon quite a lot. And 4 months in, it's almost like they expect a deal to land on their laps. But for me, because I've got that hard work, perseverance background, I just never give in. Okay, because I know that I'm doing the right thing and it's just the numbers game or a time game, whatever it is. So, you know, it was 6 months before I got my first deal. Yeah, I'd been leafleting, you know, as you taught and he'd taught since about November, you know, in 2007. So you can imagine you are getting disillusioned. But I think what people forget, and I think I was at that place as well, is that, you know, when you're starting off with limited knowledge and people say, you know, build rapport, and be confident. Well, when your knowledge is quite low, you know, you've got that apprehension. You don't talk to vendors very well, okay? So I bet I let a whole load of deals slip through my fingers, but that's just the nature of it, to be quite honest with you. You know, you can't expect to roll out of bed and know it all. So, you know, typically I just got better as I went along. But and certainly in year one, that's what I managed to achieve. Two buy-to-lets.
I say there's a few things involved in that. I think you're absolutely spot on. You're not 100% confident because you're still trying to work out whether it's going to work. And whether you're talking direct to vendor or an agent, you know, it's the same thing. It's the same, like, you know, confidence coming across as though, yes, I can definitely buy this because you've done one before and you know, rather than just sort of going out. So it is harder when you're starting out because that confidence isn't there. But also the other thing is you start sowing seeds. So you're saying, you know, this is very much from leafleting. This is very much from just making connections and getting stuff out there. You know, you had thousands upon thousands upon thousands upon thousands of leaflets going out there. And, you know, when you first do a run of 10,000, you're not going to get much response. But when you put the second 10,000, 20,000, 40,000, 100,000, 200,000, you know, suddenly you've got a whole load of stuff out there and you just need one of those leaflets to make that impact. And then bang, you're off. And it's the same, you know, you just sow that. I always talk about sowing seeds. You're constantly sowing seeds. That ball of momentum grows and you then it's easier, you know. So for me, you know, obviously I've been sowing seeds for 15 years. I've been in property for, you know, okay, I've gone and headed in different directions, done different projects, different things. You're the same, you know, been sowing seeds for a long time, which means some of them grow. You know, it's amazing. Even just yesterday, you know, literally, someone said, oh God, I was wondering if it was you. I was meeting up with someone and it was like, I'm wondering if it was you. It was an agent I knew 10, 12 years ago, you know? And it was like, oh, could I, you know, I thought, you know, all right, of that name, I thought, well, there's only one Mike Frisbee. It's like, is it him? Is it him? And he turned up and he said, yeah, it is you. And I was going, yeah, I didn't know I was meeting you. I just thought I was meeting an Ed. I didn't know it was you. So, you know, you've got that instant connection and rapport. It's easier, isn't it? So,
Yeah.
I think that is a key thing. And as you
said, I think it is. I think it is. And I think you've got to be realistic. You know, this is not dampening your aspirations. None of that. I'm not a dream stealer or anything like that. But I think you've got to be realistic that you are where you are in terms of knowledge starting out. And these things, until you get a little bit more confident, knowledgeable, they just take time. And you've got to, as I say, stay at the crease long enough. So you can, you know, get a few runs, basically.
And also some people do strike lucky. You know, they do strike lucky. You put your first 10,000 leaflets out. They find an opportunity and it goes over the line and they've got this deal. And hey, wow, this is easy. This is amazing. And of course, then the educationers who've educated them about this, put them up there and everyone goes, oh, well, wow. They, you know, they've done it within a few weeks. So you do get lucky and you can get lucky and people do, you know, is it luck or hard work or is it perseverance? Probably all a bit of both. Mm-hmm. So it does happen quickly for some people, but it's like that then shapes your view. And that if it takes you a year, it's like, this isn't right. But in actual fact, there's nothing wrong with that. Property is, you need to do it properly and don't compound mistakes. Something that obviously I think we've probably both done is go quite at a pace. You know, you bought your first four before you realized that they were all a mistake because you hadn't allowed much time to learn from the process. I'm the same. I at times were buying, you know, quite rapidly and probably compounded some mistakes because I didn't let things settle and lie and learn. You know, there's a massive cycle in property. Now that I've done, you know, we've both done this length of time, you've learned so much, haven't you? And you do so much different now going in and buying properties than when you first started, because you just look at things in a different way, because you've been with that property for such a long time. You've been with tenants for such a long time. You have all of this different viewpoint, whereas at the time, and of course, all the courses just talk about, is this a deal or not? They don't talk about, is this in the right location? You know, is it the right, what's the maintenance going to be like? What's the tenant type? What's all of this? Does this fit into your strategy? Blah, blah, blah. They talk about, is this a deal? Can you recycle cash? Or, you know, some of the other educators, you know, 25% B&V, if it's not, don't bother. It's like, actually, some of the best properties I've bought over these 15 years are the ones that actually probably have the least amount of discount.
Yes, that's right. Absolutely. Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
So we've talked a little bit about maybe what was the worst deal, how are you getting going? And then, so what's, let's talk a bit more rosy and say, what's been one of the best deals that you've done?
Well, as I finished that first year, went on to year two, and you've got to remember what I said at the start, I really didn't want to give up work. I really liked what I did as a senior scientist at AstraZeneca. But clearly, one has to be realistic then how much time. You know, I had three children. I was work full-time. My wife was working full-time. So there's a sense of realism that you've got to get used to. Everybody's situation is different. That's why comparing yourself to other people, it doesn't really serve. You've got to. So I was happy just, you know, doing two or three deals a year. And of course, these are all buy-to-let at that time. So the year after training with Simon, I just carried on more of the same. I then started to add a second direct to vendor strategy, because I literally only did a year and a half. For a year and a half, I only did leafleting, you know, mass leafleting. We're not talking landlord letters, mass leafleting, okay? Because it was buy-to-lets that I was after. And you only leaflet those areas where you think deals will stack, of course. You know, you don't go in the posh parts because, you know, it's not gonna stack. So I then just added over the next year or two, I added other strings to the bow. I delved into newspapers, postcards, you know, the usual sort of direct-to-vendor methods that were being taught then. And some of them, well, all of them, actually, I think I'm the only person I still know that actually got a deal from a postcard in a newsagent. Okay. I know they talk about it, but you never hear anybody who's actually done one. And I certainly did one. So newspapers, postcards, even some internet leads. But what started to happen, actually, and it's a bizarre thing that happens, and this is, people talk about the journey, circumstances change. Portfolio is growing nicely, but you know what buy-to-lets are like. By the time you've refinanced, okay, and got it on a sort of a remortgage, having recycled your funds, you know, depending on where you are, you'd be lucky to be making a couple of £100 net cash flow. This is fine, you know, because, you know, if you're running it alongside a significant other business or job, it's a nice extra little bit of income stream. But there was going to be a twist here, you see, in the tale, because in about 2000, I think it was late 2009, early 2010, my wife said she's had enough of her job. She said, I want out. You're obviously doing this property stuff. I mean, she was doing the accounts at that point behind the scenes, and so could see the cash flow. She said, well, we're going to need a hell of a lot of those. So can't you learn to do something else? She said.
Learn to do better. Learn to do better.
Can't you do? Because the buy-to-lets are great. Well, you know, we like them, and we will come on to sweating the assets, obviously. So I said, okay, let me look into that. And I started looking at HMOs. This is going back to early 2010, I think it was. And I said, well, if we can do HMOs, and I hadn't done one at that point, I said, you know, realistically, that could generate, it need more money to obviously go in. And an inquiry came up, which I would still regard as one of my best deals, okay? And it was internet. I used all my skills that I'd learned to really secure that deal. And we got our first student HMO up and running. I mean, the interesting thing about that one was it was direct to vendor. It was an internet lead. At the first meeting with the vendor, I quickly recognized that they were motivated and that it's been stuck on the market for quite a while. And there was a real strong motivation just to get the thing sold. Okay. But I also recognized that when I went to see the couple the first time, the wife did all the talking. Okay. So I said, let me go back and crank some numbers. And I'll, you know, they were just around the corner from where I currently live. I said, I'll come back and talk to you face to face about what I can offer, why I can offer that, et cetera. But I took my missus down the next time because I thought, you know what? She's going to feel a lot more comfortable knowing actually, you know, he's a family guy, because people can say all sorts of stuff, you know, and all the rest of it. I don't know if it helped, because you'd never know the alternative if you hadn't done it. But that became the best deal that we did for that reason, okay, where I used all my negotiating, rapport building, persevering, all wrapped into one. We've still got it. It's now, 11 years since that first HMO's been running. It's a student HMO. It's a good, solid five-bed HMO, never empty, and it's a great model. So once I grasped that the student HMO model worked, well, surprise, surprise, I switched, okay? And that actually became our next strategy, not just HMOs, because as you know, there are different sub-models within HMOs depending on your area, okay? Yeah. So it became a case of building a small portfolio of student HMOs. So that, that became the big cash flower. But there was a sting in the tail, because back end of 2010, when we were gearing for her to go, AstraZeneca announced they were closing my site where I did all my work. Okay. So actually, without going into it, long way, I left before she did, and she was not happy.
Oh dear.
She was not happy. Not happy at all. That's because my job was going to go. There was no other local employer where I could apply my skills that I picked up with all that studying. So it became the logical choice, and it should have been her, because I was happy. But, this is another lesson for people, that you don't know what's around the corner, and you wouldn't expect a blue chip, well-known company like AstraZeneca suddenly announce that it was going to close the R&D site, which is close to where I live. It's in Loughborough. And there was 1,000 people working there, Mike. And, it closed. It did. It took a while, a year and a bit, with all the sort of stuff they have to go through. But that was the reality. Now, by that time, we had a couple of HMOs, a decent sized portfolio of single lets. So actually, I'd matched my wage. So It wasn't going to be, couldn't feed the kids and all the rest of it, had to leave the house. So it became an easy decision, of course. And because I'd been there 22 years, well, you can understand that the redundancy pay was nice. It's very, very good. And that all helped, in terms of making the decision to actually leave a job I quite liked, quite loved, and say, right, I don't want to relocate to another part of the world or any other part of the UK. We're going to stay put, and I'm going to become a full-time property investor. In fact, we're just coming up, this December will be the 10th anniversary. I don't know where it's all gone since I left. So that's what happened.
It goes fast, doesn't it? It does go fast.
Yeah, but I felt really bad, actually, because it was her that she was miserable at her job. And, it's one of those, she really definitely wanted to sack the boss and the job. So I did my best. Luckily, I had the redundancy money, all that sort of stuff. So I did my best to really push through to increase the cash flow of the business. Initially, we did that by just acquiring some more HMOs. Okay. But then, which we'll touch on to, I also switched to social housing. Okay. Because I also learned a little bit I picked up from you, a few other people. And I thought I can come on to the reasons why did I move to social housing? Because it's not everybody's cup of tea working with LHA tenants. And, me and you've talked many times about the ups and downs. So
the realities of it, yes.
Yeah, so there was a good sound reasoning behind switching to a certain other model. And I think you should always think about why you're switching rather than just because your friend down the road is doing it. And it should be driven, I think, through, some sort of reason, wealth reason, really, because we're in the property game to make money, get our time back and all the rest of it. And the two are related, aren't they? You can't get your time back until you've got some money to replace the time that you were putting in the first place, your hours, your hourly rate, as Simon used to call it.
Yes.
So the HMOs, we've added a few more over the years. But one of the things that petrified me, and people might find that a bit weird, is I was really petrified of leaving AstraZeneca. The reason is that while I love property and the time, I'm actually quite wired up academically. Okay. And the thought of sitting on my ass, excuse the French, just watching the rents come in and doing more deals, it was not sitting very comfortably with me.
Yeah, where's the challenge and where's that new growth and learning?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I started even before I left to say, right, where's my sort of, I don't want to call it academic, but where's that input going to come from?
That growth. I think it's just growth. I mean, obviously you want to, continuing to learn and grow, and I think it's growth, isn't it? You do that a lot through the academics. I think everyone needs to continue to grow, or they they you know, in whatever way that they want to, and yours is probably through that academics, you know, feed the mind. Yeah.
So I started looking. I knew I was obviously going to carry on adding units. And so the first opportunity that came up before I left AstraZeneca, actually, and I managed to take it on because they interviewed me, was actually I was the local rep for the National Landlords Association. Okay. I needed some structure in my life.
I remember that. I remember you taking that on.
Yeah, it was a part. It was a part-time role. It wasn't full-time, so that suited. It meant that I could continue with some of the corporate stuff because I had to arrange their local meetings, go and sit in the council meetings. You know, I saw it as a great opportunity to make local contacts and all the rest of it. And so that's the first thing that I actually added, you know, to my bow to say, right, apart from the portfolio, which can sustain, you know, me in terms of wealth, what's going to sustain my brain? Okay, because just watching the rents coming in and doing another house and another house, it wasn't going to do it for me. And I knew it. So that actually really, really helped that transition out of corporate and into property. And then
yeah, because not many people talk about that. Many people say, hey, I've left the job, hey, but it is actually quite hard because you have a lot of structure, you have a lot of direction, you have goals that if you don't meet, there's a lot of accountability. And if you go solo, it's like, well, I'm accountable to myself. Yes, I've got to do stuff, but actually you've also, if you've got a portfolio that's running, it's like, well, how do I know I'm doing the right things? Who can I bounce off? What can I learn?
Exactly.
What do I do today? It's all my choice.
And I have come across people, I'm sure you have, I've certainly come across some every now and then, who have done that, left their corporate or significant other, gone full-time into property, and a couple of years down the road are saying, well, I'm a bit bored, actually. What am I supposed to do with all that time? So I didn't want to be that person. So I basically started looking for other things that were going to feed my brain, basically make me grow, if you want to call it that, as well as property. So the NLA, now the NRLA, came first. And then a couple of years down the road, you know, I was approached by Simon, or we had a conversation, and he said, would you be interested in coaching and mentoring? And of course, as I said to you just off air, coaching and mentoring and training and whatever you want to call it is what I did day to day with my team at AstraZeneca anyway. Okay. Because, and so that sat in very well. The only difference was it wasn't going to be science anymore. It was going to be kind of property stuff. So that kind of came along a few years after I left AstraZeneca, and I'm still there, still doing it, still enjoying it. And I think it just makes for a very holistic, nicely rounded sort of life. So I'm not totally fixated and focused on bricks and mortar. I've got a decent sized portfolio. I will always carry on adding some units, but it's kind of gone at different directions for me, to be quite honest with you. Other things have caught my interest.
Mm. So you then moved in, obviously, for cash flow purposes into social housing. So what's that, you know, what are the challenges that you faced with that? I think, you know, there might be some people out there considering social housing. I think, you know, you and I have recently had further discussions on it because obviously rates have changed and got better. It's kind of like things go in and out of fashion, and with all the pandemic, obviously less people were, you know, there was a lot of people furloughed off work, increasing claimants. So we were going, yeah, it's a time to focusing on it again. But what has been, what, name a couple of things that work really well for you, and name a couple of things that, you know, people need to know if they're going to go into it that have been challenging.
Well, there's a couple of things there. First, I heard you talk about sweating the asset, and I was sat there, you know, whenever it was, I heard that term, and I thought, right, HMOs are quite difficult to find. Okay, yes. Number one. Number two, arguably, depending on what you're going to pay, but they cost a lot more money to set up. Obviously, depends on what, how you want to spec them.
Yeah, there's a lot of money that goes into HMOs, and we talk about recycling money, but it's just the size. You know, you could do 3 or 4 buy-to-lets with the same amount of money at the same time that you probably need to put into an HMO, because the property's bigger, and the amount of refurb, especially if you're doing high end. Certainly, when I've been looking at it, you know, you can easily spend over £100,000 on just the refurb.
That's right.
A mini development. I mean, it's just massive.
But
you know, they're good, but you just need, it's more cash hungry strategy.
So. Yeah, it is. And of course, I you know, probably JVing started. I've never really done anything with JV partners, to be honest. I've just got very good at recycling, finding the right deal, adding a bit of value, knowing my figures, and it's just been recycling my pot. Okay, maybe I haven't scaled, but then I suppose hopefully I've.
I think one of the things, my observation of what I know about, I don't know everything, but obviously we've had discussions throughout the years, is that you're very good at it. And it probably comes back to your science background, learning, trying, doing, learning, trying, doing. You've just done things, apart from maybe those first few properties that we talked about where you did replicate some mistakes, you've just been steady with it all. And I think some of those that are most successful are those that are consistent and steady. You've talked about perseverance, consistency, hard work. And it's those qualities, you know, you've not tried to run at 100 miles an hour. Sometimes I've been running like that. And actually there's been some, you know, that's where sometimes that can cause some issues. And, you know, we all go, sometimes we hear a lot of hype on social media. And so we want to do that. We get sucked into that. But you've been very good at just being steady and ending up. And now, because time is then, you know, it's the Warren Buffett approach, isn't it? Not getting sucked into things, knowing what's value, which is what you're doing with the, you know, buying property at great value. And just repeating that, but just doing it consistently, not having to buy 20 properties in a year, but buying a good number, a reasonable number, and just doing that year after year after year, because, you know, you can then look back and go, well, actually, now that you're here, which is way over 10 years, it's like, actually, I've got a good size of portfolio. You know, I would argue you've got a good size of portfolio giving you good cash flow. And it's like,
yeah.
That's been part of your secret to success, just consistency, not deviating too much, not getting too excited and attracted by shiny pennies. You know, often people want to go off and do this massive development, you know, or suddenly office to resi or this, you know, and they see other people doing it. You've stuck to what you know and just worked at it. And
I think it's been pretty much, you know, small is beautiful, smaller units. And I think, I'd admit I'm a rinse and repeat person. Yeah, I would classify. I know it sounds really boring, but I've got other things in my life, like the coaching and mentoring I do, magazine.
As you said, you've talked about the stimulation and stuff like that, but what you want to do is just be consistent in the, you know, what I admire about your property investing is the fact that you've stuck to that. You've worked out what works. You've worked a formula, you know, and at times it doesn't always 100% work in terms of, because you've tweaked things as you've gone through. You've had, you know, you can't just completely stand still, and you've realized that. You know, a number of conversations as you've been tweaking things that we've had just to learn off each other, you know. So that to me is, you know, one of the reasons. I mean, it'd be interesting to see what you would say about why have you been successful, but that to me is why one of the reasons you've been successful. And I can count endless investors who've acted like you, and maybe initially, as you said, you know, you were, you know, maybe not the shining star of being in the top five, but actually out of that program that won, you know, back 10 years ago, I reckon you'd be in the top five now. Definitely.
Possibly. I don't sort
you
of
know, top five of that program, you know, you'd be in the top five of probably the number of people who attended that course. I would suspect.
I'm quite fortunate. I don't really bother with accolades. I always tell my clients now, it's your journey. You have to decide, because everybody's different.
You know? Some people, you know, accolades and all of that, you know, becomes a big thing, doesn't it?
It does.
What I mean by that, and also it's like, what is success? Because success is different to different people. You want a good balance in your life. You want, you know, you want that academic side. You don't want it to suck all your time. And you don't want to take too many risks and not be able to sleep at night. So, that's why I think your success, that's to me why I put you in the top five, is because you built a lifestyle that really suits you. Not necessarily it's because you earn the most money or the make. It's you earn, you know, good money, but it's like, you've got the lifestyle that you want and designed. And I think that is really important in life.
I think it is to me. And that kind of happens over a period of time. I think as time has gone on, I want that time. And some of that time I have to allocate to other things, you know, like I'm starting to help my kids now, you know, they're a little bit older. So those sort of things are important to me as well. But going back to what we were saying earlier, because I know you wanted to cover some of the social housing, apart from needing a lot more money with the HMOs, the other thing that happened of note in Nottingham back in 2011 was this horrible thing called Article 4 raised this ugly head. And within a couple of years, it was silly season around here. Okay, you know, we were HMO, obviously it's very strict here, very, very strict here. You know, you just cannot do C3 to C4 here. It's a blanket no. There are none of these rules. There are no streets that are, you know, that are exempt, or the 10% that doesn't exist. Okay, it hasn't done since it first came in. So when I started looking at the portfolio, I thought, well, hang on a minute. If some of these HMOs that I was, you know, setting up is going to be much more difficult, and if I buy a pre-existing one because they were being sold, and I've got gross yield of like 8%. I mean, what's the point? Okay, because you can, with a bit of work, you can do that with single lets. So that's when I came across, I guess, some of your stuff, some of the other people's stuff, which was about sweating the asset. Then I started to think, well, hang on a minute. I've got a decent sized portfolio of buy-to-lets. Can't I do something with them? Obviously, can't switch them to HMOs, and SA wasn't really doing the rounds then. Plus, they're not in areas that are going to be very amenable to SA. They're in sort of cheaper parts of the city, but they were let out to working people. So slowly but surely, I started to pick up on what was called the LHA strategy, social housing, whatever you want to call it. And literally, in a rinse and repeat manner, I did it on one. Okay, because people get too fixated and think, oh, we've got to do it. You know, I learned the ropes. I had some training with you, as you remember, and with somebody else. You know, it doesn't matter, you know, as long as you get that good sound education. And I started to implement. And all that happened, for people who are not aware of that kind of strategy, I know social housing is very, it's got very complicated, Mike, because supported living has entered into the into the equation now. And, you know, I want to be clear with people, I don't do supported living. They're not handed over to charities. They're not handed over to councils. This is direct to the tenant. And these are not blocks of flats. These are 2/3 bed houses where we, me and you, have got techniques that we've learned and applied to maximize, sweat the asset as much as possible. So one by one, I converted all my buy-to-lets, the ones I could, okay, over to what, you know, we can call social housing or the LHA strategy. And what that did, I had to learn it. You have to, every time you start something new, you have to learn the ropes. It's a steep learning curve, and there are plenty of challenge in that sector, which is why I guess most people don't want to go there, and most people don't teach it or anything like that. But it meant that over that small portfolio, I mean, you know, I don't mind sharing, we've got 7 local buy-to-lets. It's not a huge portfolio. Obviously, we've got some HMOs. I think just applying those strategies that you were teaching and et cetera, it's taken time, but I think the cash flow net increased by about 2,000 a month. Okay. Now that's not to be sniffed at. Same property, still a buy to let. No, before people go down that road, no bills, no furniture, you know, no council tax, none of that. It's just an unfurnished buy to let. But by applying some of the rules we've learned about, you know, the LHA strategy, social housing, you're able to maximize your income. Okay. And of course, that then reduces the chances where you've now got to go and increase your portfolio necessarily, because you're actually sweating the asset, aren't you?
Mm. And also there's a thing I call about leakage, which is, you know, what should you be earning and what do you actually earn? And leakage is also in voids and cost of turnovers and maintenance and all of these things. And I find, you know, especially with the family strategy that you use in social housing, and even in my 2+2 strategy, a lot of my LHA tenants are very long term, and that means that my, you know, my leakage is very small. So again, yes, I'm not earning as much as an HMO, but the property's smaller, the property's cheaper. The property, once you've set it up, it's kind of more of a set and forget than an HMO. Whereas an HMO, you know, there is high turnover. You know, students are slightly different, but professionals, you know, you're constantly, especially if you have quite a few of them, which I do as well, you know, you're constantly filling rooms. And so the leakage is a lot more, and the maintenance is a lot more. And you have to put that liquid paint, you have to make it look nice, you have to do all of this because you've got someone fresh coming in. And if someone's in a house for a long time, they forget about the leaky tap. They get used to certain things that if someone new coming in, they want it all sorted. So whenever you change over on buy-to-lets or HMOs, there's always stuff to do. So I look at that side to it as well. And I think that also then really improves your overall profitability in the portfolio.
I think people have to think about having a mixed portfolio, yeah, because they're not putting all the eggs in one basket. And I suppose COVID has caused that to come back onto the surface. Yes. And you're quite right. Some of these houses, you know, I mean, like, you know, if you just take an example, I mean, we were talking about deals and everything. One I did, which was one of my best one for a different reason. Well, I mean, I was doing leaflet at that time, and that guy must have seen my leaflet. Oh, I don't know. I think we used to drop the same leaflet or something like that to his property every 8 weeks. He must have seen that 8-9 times. Okay. So what, as I always say, why did he call me on the 10th occasion?
Yeah, sowing the seeds. It comes back to my point about sowing the seeds. Exactly, yeah, that, I mean, you know.
I mean, his motivation changed. Okay. And he picked up the phone. We did the deal. But this is what people have to realize when they're doing the financial metrics of doing the financial analysis. You know, it's a kind of a double sort of thing they have to look at. One is, if you're putting the capital in, how quickly can you recycle it? Okay, that's fine. So you get all your money back out, you know, over a period of time, whatever that takes. But you've then got to also look at the cash flow. You know, how much is that asset producing? And as I say, this was a typical buy to let in its early days, probably producing a couple of hundred pounds net a month after remortgage. I mean, the same property now, the tenants have been there, just like you said. It doesn't always happen, but nine times out of 10, it does. They've been there 6 years. So instead of getting £200 net, I've been roughly getting £500 net per prop, you know, for that property over that 6 year period. I mean, you know, and of course the rates went up. So it's not an easy strategy, obviously, the social housing where you're going direct to the tenant, but it's one that can be learned. I learned it from scratch. Okay. And if I can do it, anybody can do it, as long as they're realistic that most of these things, HMOs and all the rest of it, they do take time. And you just have to do it stage by stage and learn the ropes along the way. And I always try to create a little mini portfolio of these. You know, I never go in it for one. Okay. Yeah. I just don't think it's worth it. The learning is too
long. The learning you have to do on some of these things is quite big, isn't it?
You know, I think so.
You also need to learn. You also need to recognize the first one you do is also part of a learning process, whether that's your first buy to let you ever do, whether that's your first HMO that you do, whether that's your first LHA property that you do, I think, and first development that you do. It's you've kind of like got to realize it's not going to be perfect. And I think a lot of people sit there waiting for it all to be perfect and 100% certain everything's going to go right, and realize actually you might make some money out of it, but you're there for a learning process as well, a learning experience.
Yeah, and I think you've got to, as I said earlier, you've got to stake the crease a while. We know the concepts of property investing. You know, the concepts are dead easy, and I've written them down here. Buy at a discount. I mean, they're easy. Well, let's all go and do it.
Yeah.
Buy at a discount, add value, recycle all your cash, and then get huge rental income out of it. Lovely. Off you go. Okay. that's it. That's the process in a nutshell. Okay. It's not easy to do. We know that. And you've got to recycle, whether it's your investors' money or your money, because you're going to need it again, or the investor's going to want it again. So it's actually no different. Whose money is, at some point through remortgage or sale, you're going to have to recycle that pot, either to give it back to the investor or to give it back to yourself so you can go again. So the model is, well, it hasn't changed, does it, since we started, but it's not easy to do. And I think if you do it, you know, piecemeal and don't get the right training and the right education, I think you're setting yourself up to not, you know, not do it correctly, to be quite honest with you. And I do that every time. If I'm going to learn something new, I'll always find somebody who I think resonates, can teach me the ropes. Okay, I still do it now. I get a baseline of knowledge, and then I move forward with it. And I think that's kind of, you know, it's a constant learning that's kind of going on. And then applying. You got to implement, okay? And that usually means making some money basically in property, and then doing some good either for your family or other things, you know, which I've slowly moved on to helping others along the way for no financial gain myself. But, you know, for most people listening to this, don't make that your aspiration on day one. Wait, sort yourself out first and then do it down the line. Okay. Yeah. That's the way to think about it. So, yeah.
So that's brilliant. So the journey to at the moment, you're basically, you know, co-editor of YPN. You're still managing the portfolio. You're mentoring people. Is there anything else on the horizon for Raj at the moment?
Not particularly. I mean, there's a couple of things I want to do property wise, because, you know, it's nice to keep abreast and do something a bit different, you know, while you carry on doing the same sort of stuff. I mean, my wife took over the day-to-day management many years ago, and it's got to a point pre-COVID actually, where she said, I don't want to do this anymore. I've done it. I know how to do it. Okay. So it's one of those where it's not, she doesn't know how to manage the portfolio. She does. Okay, she doesn't want to anymore. Okay, because you've been working alongside me for almost 8 years now on the management side. So I don't really do the day-to-day management. That's her kind of role. So, but slowly we're finding agents that we like, we've come to know locally, and, you know, sort of handing the portfolio management day-to-day over. I think you get to a point where, as you're getting older, I'm getting older, everybody's getting older, time becomes more and more important. Time to, you know, time to do other things. That property was always supposed to give you choice, wasn't it?
Yes, that's how it was sold in our days, to give you freedom of choice. And you have to be careful that you're setting up what you want to set up. You know that you, and I think again that's why I admire what you've done, is because you've set up what you wanted to set up.
Exactly. Yeah, and I have a lot of choice.
Yes, exactly. It's not your life. It's enabled you to have the life, which is what people want, but they forget that along the way.
And I think they do. Yeah, I'm not criticizing anybody who just wants more and more property. That's what I said 10, 15 minutes ago. You've got to decide what it
is. Exactly. You've got it. And only you can decide. So have a good think about it, I think is a really good, analogy to just really think about it. What do you actually want out of this? And what do you want? Because a lot of people sort of start off with something and actually it's not what they want. Generally, a lot of people do want the time and the freedom and actually don't realize. And if they set up property in a certain way, they won't get any of that. So,
I think in the early days, as you know, it is going to be hard work, and there are short-term sacrifices, and you are working 7 days a week, but it's up to you then later on whether you want that to dictate your life. And I think everybody's got a personal decision to ultimately make. And I think as time has gone on, I've kind of decided, actually, yes, I want to carry on doing property. Yes, I still go to network meetings. Yes, I will carry on adding more units, if you want to call them that. But no, I don't want to do it 7 days a week. Because I want a bit of diversity in what I do. Yeah. I mean, I could earn a lot more than YPN earns. I earn from YPN by buying another couple of properties, but that won't tick the box. So that's the reason why those stay, because I find them really, really interesting things.
Stimulating.
To be doing. So I think it's pretty much more of the same.
Where will Raj be in 10 years time? I often ask this on my podcast, and I always use 10 years because it's a bit scarier than saying in a couple of years time. So in 10 years time, where would you like to be?
You know what? I never projected that far. And I don't know why. I've never really projected that far, but I'd like to see myself doing, you know, more and more stuff for other people. You know, my kids are a little bit older, so I'm started to help them to see how they can start acquiring their first properties.
Yeah.
Okay. So bizarre though it sounds, locally, because, you know, my eldest is married and they don't really, they've got their own home, but they don't have a deposit to get going. Okay, yeah. So bizarrely, I'm helping them, or they're using my help to try and see if we can get some rent-to-rent going. Now, that might sound crazy to people saying, what's he need rent-to-rent for if he's got a portfolio? Well, it's not for me.
Yeah.
Okay? I don't need rent-to-rent, okay, but they can't afford to buy, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that strategy. Okay, I think it's a useful one, and their rent-to-rent income, and we've literally started not that long ago with a bit of marketing and all the rest of it. Some of that, hopefully a lot of it, will be used to, you know, save up for a deposit so I can get them started on a buy to let. So that's one daughter. Another one's just got married in the last month. She's now moved up to Leeds. And if anybody sees me on Facebook, they're probably wondering, why is he writing? I need to find out more about Leeds. Well, there's a reason. Okay. Cause I want to help her and her husband as well. And they're living up in Leeds now. So I think I can see myself doing more and more of that. Okay. And I think the thing is, because I'm constantly aware that there are other interests I've got, both property and non-property, it'll mean I'll never get so busy with my own portfolio that I don't have time. Okay. To help family, to help some friends who've reached out to me. Sure. It's not going to make me any money, but that's okay, because I've got a decent sized portfolio that we service very well. And so that's what I see. Travel, which hopefully will come back. Well, it is coming back. So that's
coming back, isn't it? This week they've relaxed rules a bit, or they've announced they will.
That was always on the cards. I've already done one stint out in India, 2 weeks voluntary work a couple of years back. I'm supposed to go back actually this year, 2021. That never happened. So I've been out there to teach underprivileged kids back in India. And it's all this time. That's what allows you to do that time that I could be anywhere doing anything. And the portfolio is effectively paying me regardless of what I do. And I think that's a powerful thing about property, and a real positive thing about property, to say, if you're listening to this, you know, if you haven't started, you know, it's only now. You can only start now. So get on with it. Make a start. You don't know what's around the corner. As long as you make a start, and stay on the path, as you know, I think you've asked about a book and a podcast, so on.
Yes, I was going to. That's what I was going to get onto next. Is like, is there a particular, you're talking about a book earlier, I think, that you've taken to, but is there anything in terms of something that stood out to help you along your journey in terms
Yeah, there is one which I recommend to everybody, you know, all my sort of clients and everything. It's not new. It's something I read again and again, and it's kind of fits with my personality, I guess. It is called The Slight Edge by Jeff Olson. And that is actually, you mentioned some of the terms there, sowing the seed, steady, you know, slow and steady wins the race. It's that kind of concept that he talks about in the book.
Yeah, and that's the concept you've done. Absolutely, I can see that. Well, now you mention that book, that's so obvious for you. The Slight Edge, The Compound Effect, very, very similar.
Similar book, yeah. And that's kind of it, is, you know, taking little actions over a period of time. I've done the same with Rent to Rent. I've gone through it, done some reading, read a few books, all that sort of stuff. Made a little action checklist and started to go through it. You know, whether you want to put a label under that, I mean, you know, if you read The Slight Edge or The Compound Effect, you'll see it's clearly part of that process, okay? Yes. That, you know, it's a steady movement towards what I hope, fingers crossed, will be a deal, okay? Mm. But, you know, I can't guarantee that, no more than anybody else can. But I think unless you put the effort in and give it a go, well, it's never going to happen, is it?
No, exactly. So I think just to summarize, as we're probably coming to the end of our time here, and it's been a great chat, really enjoyed the chat with you as usual, and some great insights. But just, I think there's a few things, you know, that whole slight edge thing of just sowing the seeds, being consistent, persistence. And as you said, there were some traits that you probably picked up when you were young. And I often find that so often it's the young, you know, somewhere in your life has shaped you as you are today, that's had a positive effect on you that might have been tough at the time, but it certainly had a positive effect and you know, meant that you've gone on to do some great things. And you've certainly gone on to do some great things in property. And also what is great is that you're giving back and being involved in the community consistently. So that's great. Raj, so have you got anything else to add before we go? And if people want to get in touch, what's the best way to get in touch?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know whether it's a podcast, whether you put your email address or something like that. That's probably just the best way if they want to reach out to me to discuss anything. You know, they'll see my ugly mutt in YPN regularly.
I was gonna say, pick up a YPN if you want to see Raj and maybe get a hold of him. There's maybe some contact there. Maybe if you want, if do you decide who features in YPN and stuff like that? And you obviously interview some people anyway for that. And I've always written articles, and there was a time when you were doing book reviews, I think, or something as well in there.
Yeah, that's kind of tailed off a bit because I took on the co-editor role. But yeah, I will carry on doing book reviews and always happy to chat to people. So, you know, you can either put my email address in the show notes or whatever.
Or get into contact with us and we can introduce you. But it's been fabulous talking to you. And, you know, I'm sure we're going to have many more discussions about property and chew the curd. And it's nice. What I like about it is it's, you know, someone else, you know, certainly in the social housing side, someone else who's got that in-depth knowledge of you know, actually practicing the strategy. You know, it's not always, you know, unfortunately in this world, does, you know, you can talk to a lot of people, but there's often rarely as many, you know, that many people out there who have something going and have that knowledge through experience, I find, you know, or you find other experienced people, but they're not necessarily doing something quite as similar as you. So, you know, therefore it's hard to pick up little, you know, nuggets of gold that you get through those conversations. So no doubt we'll talk again through those. And I really appreciate your time. And it's been a fantastic discussion. And I hope the listeners have got something out today. So if you've you know, enjoyed what you've heard, you know, like, subscribe and share the podcast. You can get us on all the you know, podcast platforms, Apple, Spotify, etc. So tune in for the next episode too, as we've got some more exciting episodes coming up. But it's been a fantastic chat today with Raj, and I'd like to thank you very much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure as always.
You've been listening to the Property Business Accelerator podcast with Mike Frisby. Don't forget to subscribe and follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and at our website, propertybusinessaccelerator.co.uk.